Greetings, this is J.R. Dickey. Thanks for tuning in to our podcast. And by the way, don't forget our website, graceandtruth.net. I hope you're having a great day, but if not, hang with me. It's about to get better. Okay, today's lesson is for all of you guys that are and gals who are task-oriented. Let's get started. You know, I can relate to Peter. You know, he was a doer, a get-her-done kind of guy. So he couldn't just sit around waiting for Jesus. I think he was also the kind of guy that could carry a big load of guilt, that is. So after Christ had risen from the grave and they made a trek to Galilee, Peter said to his fellows, "I'm going fishing." I mean, what else was there to do besides wait? Evidently, the rest of the boys felt the same way because they all jumped into a boat and spent the whole night casting their net and hauling in a whole lot of nothing, nada. Then as the sun begins to rise and the morning breaks, a stranger on the shore about 100 yards off says, "Children, have you any food?" Your response is simple but honest, "No." Now, the stranger could have replied, "Of course not, you're doing your own thing." But instead, he tells these seasoned fishermen, "Cast the net on the right side of the boat, and you'll find some." Now, I confess, I've spent many, many hours fishing like these guys, just coming up with nothing, nada. And at that point, the last thing I'm in the mood for is a stranger telling me where to cast. But on the other hand, what have I got to lose? So, we could spend the rest of this devotion with Peter, but I want to focus on what happened next. Surprisingly, they cast the net yet again, but on the right side or the starboard side of the little boat, and wham! No more waiting. The net immediately filled with so many fish that all of them together could not capture the haul. Jesus made a strange suggestion to his disciples. There's no logical reason why fishing in the morning light would be better than fishing at night. There's no logical reason why fishing on one side of the boat would be better than the other side. It wasn't even directly a test of trust in Jesus because they did not know it was him until after the fish were caught. Thanks, Dave Guzik, for that. Okay, now, it seems evident that the fish themselves were not the important thing in this discussion, but rather the number of the fish. Now, some interpreters, like Augustine way back, thought that because 153 is the sum of the numbers from 1 to 17, this catch of fish points toward the number 17. Now, if that's so, we should consider how the Bible uses this number. Okay, its first mention, which is usually the most significant, is with Joseph. It says in Genesis 37:2, Joseph, being 17 years old, was feeding the flock with his brothers. Now, Joseph was sold into slavery by his brothers, brought to Egypt when he was 17. He spent approximately 13 years in Egypt serving Potiphar, being imprisoned, and finally being released and promoted to a position of power by Pharaoh. At the age of 30, he was raised up out of prison and appointed over all of Egypt. Now, Joseph's story in Egypt, particularly his rise to power and subsequent ability to provide for his family during famine, is often seen as a type or prefiguration of Jesus Christ. Joseph's suffering, betrayal by his brothers, and eventual forgiveness and service are seen as mirroring aspects of Jesus' life, including his suffering, death, and resurrection. It is also significant that after Joseph's resurrection, out of the pit of prison, so to speak, the family of Jacob was eventually bound in Egypt for some 400 years. In like manner, after Jesus' resurrection out of the pit of hell, God's attention and grace was upon the church, while the Jews were eventually bound, if you would, by the world for some 2,000 years. At the conclusion of both these bondages, it is Joshua, or Jesus, same name, who led and will lead the Jews into the promised land. So it could be that the specificity of 153 fish was a prophetic type of what Christ planned for both his church and his people as portrayed in the life of Joseph and his family. And why specifically the right side? Did the stranger say it had to be in the right side or the right hand of the boat? Why? I suggest that it was yet another indicator of who they were listening to, for these words are frequently used to indicate God's Son, such as in Psalms 80, verse 17, "Let your hand be upon the man of your right hand, upon the Son of Man, who you made strong for yourself." In Psalms 118, 16, it says, "The right hand of the Lord is exalted, the right hand of the Lord does valiantly." Isaiah 41:10, "Fear not, for I am with you. Be not dismayed, for I am your God. I will strengthen you. Yes, I will help you. I will uphold you with my righteous right hand." Now, John says that he wrote his gospel to help those who didn't see the resurrected Christ to believe in him. And in the first 20 chapters of his book, we learn of some 7 miraculous signs presented for that purpose. But then he adds chapter 21, wherein he presents the risen Lord as a humble servant who cooks fish and bread on the shore and ministers healing to Peter's self-condemnation. It seems to be presented for a different purpose. Now, if the linkage to Joseph and the bondage of Israel in Egypt is the intended foreshadow of God's plan for his people from Christ's resurrection until his return, it would be like him saying to them, "Wait for me. I'm not finished with you, even though, like Peter, you've denied me." Friends, he will come, and all Israel will be saved. The net did not and will not break. Now may the Lord grant you peace in the midst of any storm and faith to trust him. Look for our next podcast, and may you realize more of his grace today.